Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. How are you, Darwood?
I'm good.
What's been going on, man, my guy? I love you very much, like from the bottom of my heart and the top of it too.
Well, before we came on here, I confess that I've been fighting some demons. So I haven't actually called you because I was meaning to check on you because I hit like a little bit of a low. Mm. But it's actually my birthday week. So on Friday, it's my birthday. So I decided to enjoy a bohemian week and whatnot.
What does that consist of for the people who are not bohemians?
Living as a bohemian. I'm not doing anything that is not creative, that is not my purpose, and that I'm going to be cool with my kids and the joyful dad. And I'm just going to, I was up till 3 a.m. painting yesterday and whatnot. Like, and I was like, oh, go to bed. You got podcast in the morning.
I hear you. So, Darwood.
Yeah.
As I said, I love you.
Love you too, bro.
And you're one of my favorite people on earth. And we've reoccurred for now like 25 years or something.
Coming up. Yes.
It's going pretty long. I love this for us. But we also have some friends.
Yes, we do.
We've got some friends.
Yes.
We are friends. We are friends. We're not lonely.
So first and foremost, we have Ken. Ken, how are you?
I'm good, but I'm tired.
No, we don't want to hear that.
No, but that's the reality. I'm like telling you straight from the
heart. You cannot be tired on this podcast.
But you're tired for good reasons. That's not really tired.
Do you know what?
Tired is when you can't be bothered at life.
No. That's not. I'm full of life. At the
there
minute.
You go.
Because I know. Yeah. That's listen. Yeah. Every time
so that's
I read
why you can't say tired.
There's this like. It's like an ascension in tone every time I speak to you.
Yes, now
you're just going to be like, I own Britain.
Oh, yeah. Come on, bro.
You know what? Yeah, because Kanye West had an incredible question. This is one of his good questions in the last 5 years where he says, how much does the earth cost? I want to buy it.
Okay.
That's and then really I thought about it. That's and I was like, of course it has a price. Everything has a price. How much does earth cost?
You know, every now and then, people forget how much of a genius Kanye actually is.
Ooh.
We do. Like, we think because his behavior's erratic since his mum died, like, it's super erratic and whatnot. Like, I think he's on the spectrum and he's just never been diagnosed.
I think everyone knows he's on the spectrum. He's made that very abundantly clear.
But when he does genius, it's undeniable. And that's one of his genius moments.
Well, him and Ken are going to put 50-50 in and buy it.
I just want a little nice, hot, warm corner. Where it doesn't rain.
Oh, yeah.
Rain's good, though. You need rain.
No. I don't.
In the overall ecosystem, yeah. But just send me bottled water. I want Fiji water sent to me.
Do you know what? One of our kids literally loves rain. Literally just loves going out and running around in the rain.
That's my favorite child of yours. I'm just saying. It's just for the concept of that matters to him. That's my favorite one.
You know what it is? In Nigeria, rain's beautiful because you hear it on the tin roof.
It's even better when you're sleeping.
It makes you sleeping.
Exactly.
Come on, bro. It's the thing. But over here, rain's not cool.
Nah, it's not.
It's a different kind of rain.
Yeah.
And it feels acidic.
So Ken, you're the founder of Humble Penny.
Co-founder.
Let me land my plane. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm a broadcaster journalist. You're the co-founder of Humble Penny. Mm-hmm. And before I get to the cool person in the dynamic, okay?
Yes.
I just want to sit with you. What you don't know, Mary, yeah, is I honor you in your absence all the time.
Oh.
The first
yes.
three questions that I always ask, where are you and how are you? Okay? So I ask how he is because I yeah. care. Yeah. And he's a beautiful person. But yeah. then I'm like, where is she? He didn't bring her. Where is she? We want to hang out. So I'm going to come to you soon.
Cool.
But Ken, you arrived here from the shores of Nigeria.
Yes. Proper.
In, was it 94? 92?
98. 98.
98.
14 going on 15 years old.
You were in the Dope Black group.
Yes.
Dad's group. Mm-hmm. You've been a wonderful human being to me. My favorite person that I didn't know before, that I do know now, is you out of the group.
That's very generous.
That's a lot of people. Yeah. Now we're going to turn to the woman that you have made smile from inside out.
Yeah.
The amazing co-founder of Humble Penny. We have Mary. How are you, Mary?
I am great. And I'm not going to say I'm tired. I am great.
Yes.
Just say that I'm my amazing. Energy is in transition.
That's
at this
right.
time.
Yeah, in transition. something like that.
So, Mary, I think it's impossible to move forward without mm-hmm. getting your version mm-hmm. as to how this man captured you. What did he do? What did he take from you? What did he hide? Did he lie about things? Did he kidnap you? Tell us the story. How did you meet?
Ken was actually very honest, and that was one of the main things that I actually loved about him.
An honest black
him.
Man. Let's clap.
Very honest.
Come on.
Very
so many of us.
Honest,
we need to normalize it.
Vulnerable and transparent and humble from day one. Mm. But how we met, what was the question? How did we meet? Or how
yeah,
did
what's
capture
your meeting
my heart?
Story? That's the best part.
Long of the short, we both attended a property seminar that was run by Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki.
Oh.
He wasn't there in person, but one of these people were there to run the session. It was a 3-day intensive workshop. Started at 9, finished at 6:30. And yeah, I attended with my brother. Ken attended, didn't know each other at the time. Yeah, and Ken said, in his words, he saw me at the back of the room. He was in the front.
And he stopped
made
concentrating.
His way.
Investment like seminar over.
Like that.
My priorities changed straight away.
Yeah.
I came to make money, but I think I found a wife.
Exactly, exactly. He found something else to invest in.
Hey.
Yeah. Mary hey. Sounds expensive, by the way. Like, do you see them? Those sentences? It's like sure. value. Value me.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Mm. And he did just that. But yeah, what did you do? You made your way to
what was the move?
The
did he go by proxy via your brother? Because that's what a real man would do. go to your brother and be like, hey, man. This course is tough.
You reminded me because my memory is really terrible. But he offered to buy us a sandwich. And he bought us a Pret sandwich, so that's how he won my heart.
Wow.
Yep.
Do you know what I like the most about that story, yeah?
Yeah.
Is because I can't see how, because he's such a nice person, I can't see him getting his gaze on and being like, yo, babes, let me.
No, exactly. It wasn't like that at all. Because he was so kind of, I don't know, sophisticated about it. You were so lovely. I was thinking, there's no way you're actually trying to move to me in front of my brother. So I just had my guard down. My guard was totally
look at
down.
The way when Ken smiles at you.
Not
Ken smiles the most Nigerian I've ever seen Ken in my life.
Come on.
But you know what? Since leaving the corporate world, like Ken has really embraced more of his Nigerian side. Like the accent is 100%. African accent every day at home with the kids, with me.
So nice. You didn't do the Nigerian move of telling a woman that you've just met that you love her?
Oh,
No.
You know what? It's deep because it doesn't translate. Because in most African languages, there's no word for romantic love.
Mm. Yeah.
So, but that's all it is. I have feelings of romance towards you.
Mm.
And that. So African women that live in Africa understand that it's not like, how do you mean you just
in Europe, though, it's like, j'adore, je t'aime. Oh my God, you're the fiction of my vision of my life.
No, but it works in French. It doesn't work in Germanic languages. Yeah. At all. These harsh Germanic languages, it does not work in.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So,
so now I'm curious. I'm just in the story. Now, then what happened?
Yeah.
How did he take himself out of the possible friend zone into the okay. What was the move?
I just loved his confidence. So on one of the days that we were at the...
She said, Kate. Is that what happened?
No. So we had loads of tasks, and one of the tasks was that we needed to buy a particular book. So this is at the...
Is this all in the same 3 days?
In 3 days, yeah. So we had to buy a particular book. And at the when that session had ended, my brother was like, okay, bye, Ken, see you tomorrow. Ken was like, oh no, I'm taking Mary to go and find, to go and buy this book in central London. I was like, oh, okay. Wow, you're so brave. Like,
so my eyebrows just went to the top of my head. Wow.
So
Ken,
obviously my guard was still down because I was thinking he's again not going to move to me in front of my brother. We went to central London, but the book shop was closed. And so he conveniently suggested that we go to Basaba to eat, which I was like, yeah, why not? We're here. Is over, you know, Basaba's literally across the road. And yeah, we just
got chatting. Was your guard still down all this
time? Yeah, it was still down. And then it was just a lovely first kind of date.
How long have you guys been married now?
How long have we been married?
12 for? Years.
12 years. 12
and
years.
Your guard's still down all this time. Go on, this whole time.
So what's just happened now is my layers of respect for you have increased significantly.
That was a move.
Oh, and I've not
that
even finished it, but yeah.
No,
yeah,
but continue now because we want to hear the thing, How did that happen?
So I realised after, you know, chatting with him and in Basaba that I definitely wanted him in my life and I wasn't sure how. Is it friends or a potential life partner?
I told you she moved in herself.
So the more we spoke, the more I thought, actually, this is somebody that I can see myself with, like long-term, as in my lifetime partner. Mm. But when we left Basaba and we're going down to the train station, I saw this poster of a theatre production, Stomp. And yeah, I randomly said, oh, I've always wanted to go and watch that. And Ken just secretly went and booked it. Mm. He said, oh,
this guy's
proactive, man.
I'd love to take you out.
Yeah, that gets a
I was really impressed. I was really impressed by
that. I'm impressed.
I want to be. Can I join your marriage? Can I come in? I want someone to book me shit. No one books me, man. Well, that's awkward. All right, cool. Well. They didn't say yes, so therefore it's like, come all right, on. I'm on the outside. So beautiful. The most beautiful thing about that is obviously knowing you now, I experience you all the time, and I just see you as the most genuine person, so I just enjoy every interaction. And then when you come to the house and you sit there, it's interesting because there's different types of people that come into our spaces. And if we're having like a dinner at my house, you really sit there as a student of the space every time. You're and you're like, wow, observant. Okay. And you start taking that in and you're like, so that's the experience. Okay. And I can hear you really processing what people are saying, whereas most other people are just so busy, i.e. me, talking and saying what I know. I know something that you miss out on discovering real things. So hearing that story, it becomes like a really interesting other side to your persona where you had a vision of someone and you just kept on making moves towards them, and every move was really classy.
You know what? It's funny. I don't even think of them as moves. I just thought, do you know what? I literally saw Mary and I thought, I literally felt when I met Mary that this would be my future wife. Literally. And I didn't know if she was single or not. I was
it didn't matter.
Well, I'll find out. And then when we got to the train station,
I think and swap used numbers to union because I've only met Mary today for the first time. But as soon as I saw both of you, I was like, "That's obvious." It's just so obvious.
You both have a really nice aura, actually, which I do.
Thank
like
you.
Sometimes when you see couples, there's a togetherness that you have, and obviously at home it could be crazy, it could be an arsehole, we don't know. But like, yeah, washed up in 3 months, you know, we don't know. but the point is, when you see you together, there's a connectivity that reestablishes. There's like a static magnet that comes together, and I think that's a really, really good sign when you still have that, when you kind of look at each other still and you're still leaning into each other, because you know, after 12 years it can get a little bit like that person.
I think you know that Bible thing about being equally yoked. I think that when you are truly equally yoked, other people can see the equally yokedness. So when you appear to them, you appear as a couple.
And that's why you were able to go in there, because you didn't see the aura of like, don't fucking touch me. It was like, maybe. And you were like, oh, do you want to go with Sam? Oh, let's go to Stomped. Let's go for a walk on the beach. Like, I hear you. I'll do the exact same thing. So you two have a book, which is really cool.
Yes.
Tell me about this book.
Thank you.
So what's it called? What's it about? How's it going to help me? I want to become a billionaire, to be fair.
Yeah. So the book is called Financial Joy. Mm. And, you know, it comes with two promises, financial and a joy. Mm. So the financial aspect is to helping you to eventually become financially free, financially independent. And then the joy aspect is maintaining, prioritizing your well-being, purpose and fun. But the book is essentially a 10-week program, which, you know, you can talk about in more detail.
It's a 10-week plan to help people get rid of debts, grow their money, and work towards becoming financially free. Mm. But it's written from the perspective of a couple, a black couple with children, mm-hmm. who have many challenging lived experiences that many people have. Mm. I am a first generation immigrant. We have children. There are many other challenges that we face, you know, and many people face. But having been on that journey and still been able to design our own life of financial joy, we want to help people create theirs. Mm. So for everybody, financial joy has a different definition. For you, it would be very different. For Dawood, it would be very different. Mm. So we want to help people identify theirs, but the book then walks you through, how do you do that? How do you actually create that life in a 10-week plan?
So cool. Can you coach me right now collectively? Like, I'm reading your book, but can you give me a coaching session? I want to reach financial joy. What would that look like?
So it actually starts with being clear on what financial joy means for you. So if I ask you that question, what does a life of financial joy mean to you?
It'll be one that I can only work 4 days a week, 4 hours a day. It means I could pick up my kids and take them to school. It will mean that I could travel minimum 6 times a year, mm-hmm. and I could basically live inside a carnival. Mm. And I think if I had to have one extreme luxury, it would either be a driver or a chef.
Love that.
Do you know what? The chef one. Anyway, I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
It's one of the two, because like right now, I just did a whole madness to get here on time, mm-hmm. and I had to take my kids to their mothers at like 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
Then I took an hour to get here, hour and 15 to get here. Mm. So if I had a driver, I could just sit in and work at the back. And I would absolutely. So I don't know if you've seen Lincoln Lawyer. I had that feeling yesterday. I was in an Uber all day yesterday and I felt that feeling of like, I could do this. Wow. So that would be my last thing that I would probably like to have.
Interesting listening to you is a lot of your, what life or financial joy looks like for you was more on the joy side. So I didn't hear a lot on the financial side. So the thing we find with people is they usually have an imbalance across those areas. Some people are either just chasing finances, the money. I want to become financially free, and they do it at a cost. And I've been there, and we share a lot of the experiences that actually ended up being like a point of no return event where I collapsed actually out of overworking. And I feel like in life, you often need like a slap in the face event for you to wake up and go, whoa, like I need to create a shift in my life. And that shift was, how do we introduce more of the joy element? So for you, listening to you there, what if you had to give some definition, in order for us to begin this journey, we need to be very clear on what the financial element looks like. What's the goal in your mind?
Well, for me, it's to have a lifestyle that affords that.
Mm. Yes.
So to discovering what the number is, within that framework, and what I'd have to commit to be able to achieve that.
So the book then walks you through, how do you define that number? Yeah. So we have a framework we teach, the POST, the POST framework, which stands for purpose, objectives, strategy, and tactics. So, POST. So P is for purpose. So what's your why? What are you living for? What's the life vision you have? And O is for your objectives. So what are your goals? You need to be really clear. So for example, there's no point in saying, I want to live a life where I can do what I want when I want. That's not a goal per se. It needs to be more like, I need an investment portfolio of £750,000 by the 31st of December, 2030. Mm-hmm. It's very clear, right? Because then out of that objective, we can then go, oh, okay, what's the strategy? And who can get us there the quickest? So S is then, what approach will we take? Would it be stock market investing? Would it be your career as a direction? Would it be your career plus a side hustle? Or would it be you maybe investing in other assets like property or commodities and what have you? And then the tactics is then, what are your everyday steps? What are the small steps that will help you begin to get closer to make that strategy become a reality, to achieve your objectives, to ultimately achieve the purpose that you set up for your life? So the book then goes into helping you to almost paint a picture of what that your POST looks like. Mm. And then we then start to walk you through behavior. Because the thing with money isn't just about knowledge. It isn't just about learning, I don't need to be in debt, because that knowledge actually doesn't do anything. It's like saying, it's like knowing you shouldn't be texting or looking at your social media whilst you're driving. Everybody knows that, but we still do it. Mm. So we then walk you through, how do you create behavior change? Mm. Like, how do you actually shift from a place where you are living paycheck to paycheck, or you book your holidays with your credit card when you don't have the money? Mm. How do you go from there to a place where you're potentially debt-free and become an investor?
Mm.
Yeah. As well as introducing like behavioral biases that we all face, you know, like impulse buying is a behavioral bias. Like you go on social media, somebody mentions something. There's some really interesting stats on how quickly people impulse purchase when they see stuff on social media. So we highlight what those are and how to kind of navigate those. And then we're then moving from there onto then practicalities. So how do we manage day-to-day finances? How do you do it as a couple? How do you raise financially savvy children?
Mm.
Yeah. Big topic.
Yeah.
You know, how do you create what we call a joyful spending plan, which is essentially your budget, but with joy at the center of it, allocating certain elements to the things that are fun for you. Like, for example, Mondays, Mary and I like to go swimming. And then after that, go to sauna. That's a great thing that we, you know, and we allocate a bit of money towards that. But the thing is, most of us just think about what we need to do, our everyday expenses, our bills and stuff, but without actually putting the well-being in front. And then from there, we start to work towards other areas, like how do you grow your money?
Mm.
Okay, so you say living within your means. What does that then mean for growing your money? How do you actually invest in the stock market without losing all your money? How do you look at other asset classes like property and so on? And the book then carries on one after the other. And then looking at things like retirement, you know, you want to potentially retire one day or have the option to retire early. What does that even mean? Because for everybody, for millennials, for Gen X's, for baby boomers, the concept of retirement is a completely different thing. Some people don't want to wait till they're 65. Okay, if you don't want to wait till you're 65, what should you be doing right now? What investing account should you be prioritizing right now? Should you be putting money into a pension, or should it be into your ISA, and why? You know, so it's a very almost like a decision tree type move. So the book essentially is there to help everybody, because financial joy is accessible to everyone, is there to help everyone map their path towards their life of financial joy.
It's literally, sorry, I was going to say, it's literally all of our best work that we've been blogging on and producing YouTube videos on. It's just all in one place. So, you know, for once, instead of instead of people having to go to all our different platforms, we've literally just put it all in one place, but very comprehensive, and it's like a detailed step-by-step guide.
This is genius. I'm probably one of the most financially literate people. I've got terrible habits when it comes to finance. As soon as you mentioned it, you pre-ordered it
literally on Amazon. Thank you for pre-ordering the book.
Thank you.
Because every time I've been in your presence and you spoke about money, I've learned.
Wow.
And whatnot. So if you've put, I feel like I'm about to go and look at the Mona Lisa.
Wow.
Now, I know this is a masterpiece. I already know. Just even how you just explained it just now, it made so much sense to me. And that, and like Marvin will tell you, there's been bare times when I've told you about my financial struggles and that, so like I need to get more financially literate. I'm so grateful that my son is on the money. Like, he just went and learned about money. He was like, yeah, I'm not doing this poor shit. And he's just on it.
How
like,
old is he?
He's 22.
Like, 22
you've got 22 year old.
He just bought himself a car.
Amazing.
He just bought himself a car, and he sat me down the other day to explain, because I've never owned a credit card. And he sat me down, Dad, he's like, Dad, and he explained that what debt and how black people have a fear of debt and whatnot, and not knowing that you're supposed to move money. And when he's explaining it to me, I was like, yeah, I've just never even looked at like that.
That's such a fascinating stat, because one of the things we touch on in the book is how different groups of people in society use debt. So there's expensive debt, which credit cards and higher purchase and vehicles and things like that. And then there's actually cheaper debt, which, because debt actually just discriminates. It's the thing. If you look after your money, debt's cheaper for you.
Which is what he said. That's exactly what he said.
So because of that discrimination, we also notice there's a gap in society because the people who have a lower cost of debt are then able to borrow cheaper and invest in assets that appreciate with inflation.
Yeah.
Property, for example. Yeah. So when you go and look at this thing called a Wealth and Assets Survey by the ONS, the Office for National Statistics, you look at that, you can see how the debt picture in the UK, you notice that for less wealthy households, they have more, fewer assets, obviously, but much more expensive debts. But for wealthier households, they still have debt, but they have cheaper debt, but they have a lot of property assets and pension assets and other financial assets. So they're using debt in a different way. And interestingly, actually, even further, looking at stats on like credit cards and stuff, research shows that around 80% of the users of credit cards are poorer households and actually fund credit cards' existence that people who are much more savvy with things like that are able to use it without paying a penny in interest.
Yeah.
But the people who carry the burden are the people who, unfortunately, are using it because they may need it to meet their kind of living costs and stuff like that. So it's actually really fascinating because it helps you kind of understand, actually, there is a possibility for me, if I understand how money works, if I'm financially literate and I understand money and I understand behavior and habits, I'm able to, over time, shift my financial destiny.
Yeah.
And even beyond that, shift the financial destiny of my family and my children, if you've got kids or whoever, you know. Yeah. So that, for us, is what excites us about the work we've done in this book.
Amazing. So look, we have two financial experts in the building. I think it's important that we come up with a couple of dilemmas. We got sent quite a few, actually. I'll talk to some of the themes rather than go into, because some of the stories are quite long. But there was a young woman who has a group of friends from school. They've been in each other's lives for almost 10, 12 years. Someone was getting married in the group, and the wedding was in Dubai. And it required a financial commitment of about £3,500 for her to go. And she declined the invitation on the basis, and as a result, it was £3,500. And as a result of declining that, she was removed from the whole wedding party, disinvited from the wedding. And she went to her partner, and the partner was like, yeah, you're right. Like, but her friends and the woman who was getting married said that you should have taken out a loan or a credit card and been there.
Wow.
What would you say to that woman? Because I feel like these things are happening more and more. This kind of culture of extravagance when people don't really have it, and people having like weddings in amazing locations, but it's costing people basically 2 years worth of holiday money to go and do it. What would your advice be to the woman who decided not to attend?
Wow, because I actually heard about this, but I didn't realize that she'd known her friend for like 10 years. So this could potentially be a very close friend of hers. There's this saying by Dan, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And that friend doesn't seem like much of a friend if she would actually disinvite her from the actual wedding because she can't attend the hen do. I think that's quite a burden to place onto people to spend, to fork out 3K. We're in a cost of living crisis. There's a lot of uncertainty at the moment. That is a big ask.
So is that not like, a good reason to take a loan out in your...
No,
so
of course not.
Absolutely
not.
Absolutely not.
Definitely not.
That, because that is, you're basically creating more poverty, personal poverty for people. And the thing is, you see, when people think about money, they think of just a finite number. But money has an opportunity cost. So it's not just that £3,000. It's what that £3,000 would have achieved, the foregone alternative of that money. Then you throw in the potential interest debt and the almost a debt spiral that could cause by that person even not being able to pay back that money. We did a video actually once asking people, why did you get into debt? And one of the most common answers was weddings and hen do's and things like that. Essentially people borrowing out of social pressure, fed by a consumerist culture to try and support other people and support their what they perceive to be their vision. So I think it's actually okay to say, no, actually I can't. I'd love you. I'd love to really support you, but I can't fork out £3,000.
Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly how she communicated that with her, you know, friend, because, you know, it's something that she should be able to communicate with a friend. If her friend, like I said, is actually a good friend, she should be able to understand. But, you know, she's essentially telling her to go into debt to fund a lifestyle. And it's not even her lifestyle, it's to support her friend. It's a big ask, if, in my opinion.
So where do you place your friends in those type of scenarios? Obviously, we all have need, want friendships and close relationships. But I think inherently what ends up happening is, how do you maintain that lifelong friendship when people just go into different spaces? Like, you're almost saying, I'm going to risk losing a friendship because of my values. Is that something that you necessarily agree with? I suppose Darwood as well. Do you agree with that? What would you do?
What would I do? I'll be, thank you for uninviting me to your wedding. Like, I hope your wedding lasts. Like, and I wouldn't say I hope your wedding lasts, your marriage lasts, in a facetious way. I, like, genuinely, like, I really hope you, but, like, thank you for exiting me. But I'm cool with cutting off people for foolishness. Like, literally, as soon as you bring foolishness, I'm like, okay, I'm out.
Yeah. So, there's a part of me that thinks it's because it's foolish to my gaze. And it's like an instant note. I wouldn't bat an eyelid. But I feel like there is a culture of people who are pressuring people to look good with them. We've seen other videos where, like, a woman took her, like, 16 friends out for birthday dinner and said her man should pay for it.
Wow.
And it was like $3,000 or something. This is US dollars, by the way. It was like $3,000 US. And she was like, you can't pay for us. And he's like, I don't even know these people. Like, why would I pay for it? And she's like, oh, you're giving me broke energy. And like, and I was just like, wow. Because it's not even the fact that she's saying that. It's just the fact that you would even think that in your head without it being confirmed in advance. Yeah, so something is happening out there. So,
how many times a friendship has ended because of money?
Yes.
Literally, I'm just like, dude, if that's the cost, then cool.
Yeah.
Like,
has that ever happened to you? Have you ever lost a friendship for money?
Yeah. The person that we met through, the friendship ended because of money.
Oh.
But literally, it was because I saw his relationship to money and his greed for money. And I was like, yeah, I can't be friends with you because at some point you will turn that gaze towards me. So,
do you know what? There's some really interesting, like, research around friendships and money. Yeah. So, when you have a friendship, the research shows that psychologists show that you should try and keep your friendships in what they call social norms. Mm-hmm. That I mean, like, if I meet you and we're chatting, the minute imagine I asked you, like, how's your son? Like, how's life? How are you feeling health-wise? Like, how do you feel as a man, as a human being? We're sitting in the social norms. Imagine two different worlds, social norms and market norms. The minute I say to you, could you lend me £500.
Yeah.
The norms shift because we're now in quantity and price. We're in a different world altogether. And that actually affects friendships because then you're now thinking of profit. You're now like, oh, well, what's going to be my return on my investment? Or what's going to be like, and that's a whole different thing because that's to affect how friendships are meant to form. Yeah. It even goes as far as gifting people things. So, for example, the research says you shouldn't really gift people money per se. So imagine I gave you £50 as a present and Marvin gave you £100. Would you consider Marvin to be a better friend because he gave you more money compared to me, for example?
Yeah.
Whereas if I gave you... if I gave you a handmade gift, it's unique. I really thought about it. I thought, what would Darwood want? And I made something and gave it to you. The level of respect you would attach to that would be very different. So money is a very complex topic and really can really affect friendships in a really bad way, depending on how we approach it.
So I'm with you. And I do think, like, keeping the two things separately, I think inviting friends into the market forces is one of the most problematic things that I've ever, and even sometimes, like, people I'm in a relationship with, whether it's informal or formal, and it's a bit like, oh, come just help me out with something. This is what you do, and I'll give you some money for it. As soon as you enter into that dynamic, the power dynamic shifts.
Yes.
Mm. It was only my therapist that told me how impactful those types of things are. Because to me, I'm just like, I'm helping. Like, yeah, you need money and I need what you do, so come. But actually, it was the psychology of the dynamic shift that people couldn't handle. Because also in the realm of money, I'm not the same. Like, if we're talking about business and my company, for example, if I was to hire you for my company and directly to provide a service for me, the dynamic would shift.
Yes.
Because now I have an expectation. I have a list of KPIs. I have a scope of work I'm going to send you. Yeah. It's a very different relationship to, hey, Ken, how do you feel about this?
Yeah.
So anytime you've ever asked me for anything, I just say yes, and then you tell me what it really is, and I'm like, okay, cool, it's fine. Like, I just, it's fine. But then I think if you said to me, Marvin, I'd like you to do a course, educate someone for me, and I'm going to give you 500 quid.
Yeah.
Now
that's different.
Yeah, now I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, because then you're like, am I worth 500 pounds?
No, I know I'm worth more.
You see what I'm saying?
So I think that dynamic has been a massive lesson to me to keep that boundary. But sometimes I just get sucked into it out of sheer urgency and pace in which I'm existing.
Yeah.
I just look for resources to get things done. But it's never really gone well.
Yeah.
And I think for me that's become a massive, massive lesson. Like I think, especially in lockdown as well, there was a lot of emotional shift for people, like losing jobs in COVID. Yes. And so, like, if you're handing out money in COVID, it's like, you know, the people get really entitled. It's just like, and where's the rest?
Yeah.
I want more. And I felt like I didn't understand it. And it was only years later through sitting with people who are qualified that they gave me the context of what's happening in the macro and how problematic it could appear that you're helping them. But also now they need you. But if you're not doing certain things, they will feel entitled to take it back or to disrupt what you're doing.
Wow.
I have another dilemma, which I think I really want to share with you because I think it's really interesting. So the other one is dating. And I mean, it's a personal story. So when I was like 19 years old, my cousin came to like a family thing with a friend. And the friend was beautiful. I was like, who the hell is that? And you know family gatherings, they're dry, isn't it? You switch off that antenna, isn't it? You just go there and try and eat mac and cheese and chicken. But like there's, she brought this really beautiful friend and I was like, who's that? And like, normally it's a terrible idea to introduce your friends to younger cousins, clearly. But I think my cousin, for some reason, said yes. So I she co-signed me and I remember going on this date at 18 and I normally get paid every Friday. Yeah. And I didn't get paid. And I think I didn't put my timesheet in properly or something like that. So when I had a budget of
time
like...
Timesheet
days. Yeah, remember timesheet days? Listen, when I used to work in the deco, come on,
I remember.
And so I didn't put my timesheet in, so I didn't get paid on the Friday morning. And I think I had £38 remaining.
Right.
Wow.
And so my budget's gone from like £600 a week to whatever that was, £38. And I was like, I'm not cancelling this date, you know. Mm. What I'm going to do is I'm going to be smart. Yeah, this is men. I'm going to be smart. And so we went for a walk, trying to do everything very, very casual. And the date's going really, really, really well. Then it got to a point of like, do you know, I'm really hungry. I was like, you know what, so am I. So in my head, I was looking for like a vendor and like, trying to keep the cute flowing date energy going. And then she was like, no, let's go in here. And I was like, sit down restaurant. Damn it.
Okay.
And at that point, she had such conviction. You know when someone says, just go here, and they start walking off?
Yeah.
So it's already happened. My permission no longer was granted. It didn't matter what I thought. So I went in there, and I looked on the menu. And this is a couple, this is many years ago. So it's over 20 years ago. So the prices was, ish, you know, £12 each. You could probably get a plate for. So I calculated that if we get a plate each, and a drink each, my card will go through and me and my mum will negotiate how I get to work for the rest of the month. We'll figure it out. Yeah. So then we get through the date. The date's happening. And then she orders starters, which ruins the whole strategy.
kills the maths completely.
Starters? Exactly. You just added £12 to my menu. And so it came up to literally £42 or something like that. It came up to. It was just above.
Yeah.
And so I'm panicking, but I thought maybe my card would just go through.
Oh, no.
Like overdraft. No, something will happen.
In the panic, you
convince yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe the numbers are wrong. Wow. So and then it declined. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. I did it again. It declined. So I was like, wow. She goes, no, I'll just get it. By the way, she was actually a little bit older. So she actually had more money than I did at the point. And I was like, no, it must be a thing. So I went out and went to the cash point. And obviously, you can only withdraw £30. You can only withdraw round numbers. You can't even withdraw the whole 38.
Oh, gosh.
Was you sweating?
No, the genuine beads and stuttering and anxiety that I went through. Because you understand, she's beautiful. The date has been going well.
Yeah.
And this is before dating is sexualized. Like, I was probably...
Yeah.
I probably wasn't a virgin, but like... Going in and dating for sex wasn't a thing yet. Mm. It was just like, I don't know what's going to happen. I just want to hold her hand.
That's it.
And so I never forget the look of disappointment in her face.
Oh. Wow.
Like it, and this is, a, I'm making
And did
this
she
up.
Know you was younger as well?
Yeah, but it's like 2 years or something.
Okay, yeah.
In my head, yeah, she looked at me and said, I know real men with cars, with BMWs and money. And I'm here with this with man this taking a chance and he doesn't even have 42 pounds. Why am I wasting my time? Wow. And you know what? After that point, I never dated broke again. Wow. Like, I just had a rule. Like, that's never going to happen to me again. Wow. Now, in this modern dating landscape, you can't even go outside with 39 pounds. You better not leave your house. So the reality is everything costs 5, 7, 10, 12 pounds to do anything. Mm. In your view, because you got together in such a beautiful way, if you don't have money, should you be dating?
Wow.
I think it depends on just how the person you're trying to date and how they think about life as well. Mm. So those two worlds are not mutually exclusive. You can't say, oh, well, because I don't have money, I can't date. I think it depends on who you're trying to date and how they look at life. Mm. So for example, when I met Mary, although I could buy the prep, you know, I actually
couldn't go to ZZ's.
You know, I took her to go and buy a book after.
Yeah.
That far as well.
Yeah. Well, the bookshop was closed, so we didn't buy the book.
You know it was closed.
No, we didn't know. But the point was, I didn't actually have a lot of money. But the person I met, Mary, you know, her view was she was also in a similar space in life, stage of life, you know, where the focus was on like aspiration and like dreaming and vision, you know. So I think it depends on who you're trying to date and what expectations you set. For example, if you're on socials and you're like posing with like other people's cars and you're giving the impression that you've got a lot of money, then your communication is going to cost you actually. Whereas if you're really upfront and say, look, this is, you know, you're not, you know, this is why, like, keep things simple. I like keeping things simple. I think it doesn't paint the wrong picture. And I think it's okay to be honest with people and say, look, you know, I can't go this Friday. I'd really love to. Maybe I can, maybe we can go to a really nice hotel and have a coffee in the bar or the lobby or whatever, you know, because then I could
control that
environment. That environment. I kind of know what's happening there and I can afford to do it. So I think communication is important. I think the unwritten communication is important. So what vibes you're giving off from your various social platforms. Like, for example, I know Mary checked me out, actually.
Yes, I Googled you.
Yeah, she like, well, back then, you know, and she saw, I think I'd created like a Facebook group and, you know, and she was just happy with my social, the elements of so many things I was interested in. I was trying to promote our community and stuff like that. She just, she liked that side of me rather than, oh, look at the really nice car I've got, you know, or look at this really nice watch I've got, you know. So I think that unwritten communication is important.
But Mary, if his car declined, would you be here? You went to Wagamama's and it went bing. And he had to get up and take out £30 because I want someone else to share this embarrassment with me because it hurts.
I really feel that for you, Marvin, and thank you for sharing that. It's, you know what I was thinking, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Like, it was quite wishful thinking of you to actually think that you could just
Don't make it about me now.
You just go for a walk. Oh, bless you. That could easily happen to anybody because you obviously didn't plan that, you know, to go to that particular
restaurant.
You're being kind.
Thank you.
Do you know what? I think it just depends on the particular stage of life that you're at. Like, you were 18. You know, some people are only just starting to build their finances. They're moving out of financial dependency of living with their parents, and they're probably still living with their parents. So I personally wouldn't have had much of an expectation, or it wouldn't have bothered me so much if your car declined. But, you know, in our situation, we were like in our 20s, you're working, you know, professional, we both had corporate jobs. You know, there would be an element of like, okay, eyebrows, is this a bit of a red flag? Is this something that I need to look, keep an eye on? I wouldn't, you know, rule it out completely. I'll just give it the benefit of the doubt, but it could potentially be a red flag as to what your
red flag. Similar behavior was exhibited,
because then it's sending signals that potentially you might not have your finances in place. Are you in debt? If you're in debt, that's fine, but do you actually know that you're in debt? And do you have plans to actually get out of it? So it's about knowing your numbers. So there's no kind of clear cut answer. It just depends like how old you are at the time. And it's also important, like Ken said, to communicate. If you're going through financial difficulties, I wouldn't say don't date at all, because you're missing out on opportunities of meeting your life partner. And you never know when you might be fully financially stable. Would it take 10 years or how long would it take? You can't put your love life on hold. I'd just say communicate to the other partner, and that could foster more depth in your relationship. You can go deeper in your relationship instead of it being surface level and just trying to impress each other. What's the word?
But so many men are afraid to be honest, because the narrative that they see on most social platforms is women don't like broke men. So it's like, I think it's been easy for me, because I think women look at me as a good time, not a lifetime partner. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, we just figured that out. All of our brains was like, oh.
So they're not trying to invest in me in that side, because there's no way a woman's going to look at me and whatnot. I rode my bike.
Don't say that.
No, I rode my bike here. I'm very upfront with...
You've got that billionaire look, bro. What are you talking about?
No, like, I'm wealthy in spirit.
Thank you.
I'm very wealthy in spirit in that year, but there's no way a woman's going to look at me and say, this guy's got like a Tesla Jeep.
Do you know what? I think it's really interesting, this topic.
I'm joking. But I don't think women look at me as this guy's going to look after me and whatnot. He's going to take me on holiday, blah, blah, blah.
They would love you to look after them, though. That's the fundamental difference.
They would love me to look after, but I'm not going to look after you in that way. I'll look after you in a different way, in a spiritual way, in a concern way, make you look at life like, let's talk about life, and you will feel safe with me, but you might not feel financially safe with me. I don't like women paying for things. I think that's the Nigerian in me and whatnot. But there's been some women smart enough to know that, okay, I think I better provide this. So they would just come to my house with food and whatnot, and little things like that without me saying stuff. And, oh, all right, cool. And that, so I think I get kind of that treatment, but I just don't like women paying for stuff. So I would never take, if a woman says, oh, let's go and eat, first thing I'm just like, yeah, we can't, because I'm not going to let you pay. So if you're very hungry, the date's ending. Like I used to say that when I was younger, like the date's ending, because if you're very hungry, I'm not going to let you pay for my food so you can eat and whatnot. So then I think I got to like 23, 24 and I stopped going on dates. Like literally, I'm not going on dates, because it brings up this way. And then I introduced this really horrible rule. I would not go out on a date with a woman that I hadn't slept with.
Wow.
Because my insecurities wouldn't let me be seen out with a woman that another guy could just take from me.
Right.
Like, oh, cool. I've had my fun, so I don't mind. I realize it was insecurities now, but back then I used to say this like a mantra to my friends, like, yo, yeah, you shouldn't go out on dates with girls you haven't slept with. And I was on some bullshit back then.
But, Mary. I have a challenge for you.
Go on.
I love Darwin, as I've mentioned three times now in this podcast. I would really like him to bring a woman around my house for one of the dinners and sit there and just like pick fluff out of each other's hair and beard and stuff and look deep into his eyes and say, do you know what? I want to live my life with you. Now, if you just think of the Rolodex of amazing women that must be in your life, do you have one that we can introduce to Darwin who would really appreciate a dynamic man such as himself?
Free.
Oh.
So I can have a choice now.
Wow. This is the most Nigerian thing.
This is why I'm single.
Pick and mix, you know.
I know.
No, they say pick and mix. I said just like...
So Mary, clearly they're going to laugh. They're going to laugh. That's a good thing. Yeah. Can't take it too seriously.
Exactly.
And you know what? They'll all get a portrait.
Oh. What do you mean a portrait? You draw?
I draw.
Oh, nice. Yeah. How old are you?
I'm if you don't mind me asking. On Friday.
Oh, okay. We don't look it. I'm just thinking. I have a few
That's a sellable.
Yeah.
But I need above 35. I can't do young girls.
Yeah, I have a friend.
So I'm just ruining your
Have a guess.
I actually worked out because you said you came here at 14, 15.
Okay. That's how I worked out.
How old you are.
But how old do we look?
I can't do math.
You look younger than... You look about 32, 33.
Okay.
And you look in your 20s still.
Oh.
Like you're going to age. So can you do Mary, so
oh, thank
good?
You.
Mary, what cream do you use?
Right. If you are listening to this, Mary's not wearing any makeup, but there's not a blemish on her skin. She uses millionaire cream.
Hey.
Millionaire
It's shea butter. That's it.
Pure Ghanaian organic shea butter.
We bought it in Ghana. We went to Ghana last year.
That's what I've been using on my bed.
Oh, nice.
So sorry, do you have a human being for...
I do.
So, I'm not explicitly even making it a woman at this point, just someone to look after him and tell him he's beautiful.
I prefer a woman though.
I do have a female friend in mind that I can, introduce you to.
I feel like, I don't want to be...
Oh, sorry, you wanted free. That's kind of pushing it. I can't...
No. You can't get free from the same source, bro. That's just going to mess up the well.
No, exactly.
We would like... We'll take the one, please, for 200. Cool. And we would like to add her to the list.
Social norms, market norms.
And so, I should say this on the podcast.
No, can you not say it then?
Can she be black?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Of course.
It's in the title.
Sorry.
The aha moment is in the title.
Exactly. So I know that sounded so racist because my soulmate could be someone from another race.
No, she still can be.
Never investigated it.
Mm.
I just don't want to have to explain plantain and amala to someone.
Okay.
I hear you.
So Mary, we're going to do dinner in a couple of weeks.
Sure.
I'm gonna find someone because my person's not here. She can be my proxy, and you're gonna bring someone for him, and then you two hopefully will still be together.
I don't know. Great, right? I love your person so much. I think she should be there via Zoom.
Wow!
Like seriously, she's amazing. I love that. Bro.
She sounds like a keeper, man.
She is.
She's a good woman.
It's hard to find. I spent three years looking, so that's quite hard. So that's it, really. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow.
For that.
That was quick.
This has been the Dumb Like That podcast. And you also have a book called Financial Joy.
I've not read it.
Are you going to interrupt me again?
No, I just want to thank you for this book.
We're trying to get out of the podcast.
I know. I'm sorry.
So. It's frowned upon in broadcasting terms.
I just wanted it to be on there.
So Ken and Mary, you have your book, Financial Joy, Banish Debt, Grow Your Money and Unlock Financial Freedom in 10 weeks. We thank you so much for coming to join us. It was great to have you here, really. And I think I learned more about your relationship than I actually ever have. So this was really nice. And multiple wins. Please make sure that you subscribe to our platform wherever you are listening, whether it's audio on a podcast platform or if it's on YouTube. We will be on YouTube. We are on YouTube. And it's a long way coming. We've got visuals. You can see how handsome we all are. And also make sure if you have anything you want to say, it's hello@dopeblack.org. Okay. So email us and say your things. Okay. If it's racist, we don't really care and we're going to keep going. Thank you everyone for listening. Darwood, Mary, and Ken, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you have anything you want to say? Where can we find you? That's a good point.
Firstly, go and pre-order the book on Amazon.
Just type in
Financial Joy on Amazon. Help us get to those bestseller lists around the world.
That's the first thing.
Please pre-order the book. It's the only way we get seen. Let's support each other. Please show the love. And apart from that, follow us at The Humble Penny on Instagram, as well as on YouTube or all the various other socials.
Yeah, we have a blog, thehumblepenny.com, where you can consume our blog content there too.
Amazing. Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.